Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Francavilla Show. I'm your host, Dr. Carolyn Francavilla, board-certified family physician and diplomate of the American Board of Obesity Medicine. I've been helping patients lose weight to treat and prevent medical problems for the last 10 years, and I'm taking what I've learned from them to you. In this podcast, you will learn the science behind why you struggle with your weight and what to do about it, tips for common challenges, work to fight bias about what a healthy weight really is, and improve your relationship with food and your body. Please remember that while I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. This podcast is meant to be informational in nature only, not medical advice. Please seek out care from your physician for your specific needs. Okay, let's get started. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the podcast. I have a guest with us today that I have been waiting a really, really long time to have on the podcast. So welcome, Dr. Ethan Lazarus.
Hi, Dr. Francavilla. Thanks so much for having me today.
So I'll tell the audience a little bit about you. So Dr. Lazarus is an obesity physician, and he is the owner and a physician at the Clinical Nutrition Center in Greenwood Village, Colorado, in Colorado, where I'm at. And he's been there for 20 years. He's the past president of the Obesity Medicine Association and a delegate to the American Medical Association. And Dr. Lazarus is one of the first obesity specialists that I met when I was interested in this field. He let me come hang out at his clinic a long time ago and see what he was doing. It was really inspiring. And, you know, because I'm very publicly out there about what I do, a lot of people that are new to the field start calling me like a pioneer. And I kind of laugh to myself and I'm like, no, like I know the real pioneers. So today I have who I consider to be a pioneer. Maybe Dr. Lazarus can tell us who he considers to be the pioneers of obesity medicine. And we're going to talk about how we help people with weight medically, or obesity medicine, as we often call it, has changed over the last 20 years in terms of medications, nutrition, exercise, and just our general attitudes. So thank you again for being here, Dr. Lazarus. And is it okay if I call you a pioneer of obesity medicine?
Yeah, although honestly, I think I'm second generation and you're third generation. So as I was getting into obesity medicine, I was coming over from family medicine, so I trained here at the University of Colorado and practiced family medicine starting back in 1999. And there was this group called the American Society of Bariatric Physicians, and I happened to know one of the founders of that was this Dr. Barry. He was friends with my folks, actually, and I'd worked in his clinic in high school. And as I went through family medicine training, much like yourself, recognized obesity as a big problem, and we really didn't get any training in it at all. So during my residency, much like you rotated with me, I actually rotated with Jim Barry and saw his practice and how he did things. And who would have thunk all these years later that I would take over that practice from Dr. Barry? So believe it or not, my practice was started back in the 70s. And there's a lot of things that have changed since then, but a lot of things that haven't. One of the neat things that's changed is that old society of bariatric physicians, now we call ourselves the Obesity Medicine Association. And of course, that's where I've really gotten to know most of the providers that are practicing state-of-the-art care, including yourself and Dr. Fitch, our current president, and Dr. Premack, our past president. And it's just been this amazing journey seeing this field go from what I really thought was fringe medicine, because we weren't taught about it. So a lot of people thought it was fringe medicine. When I was getting into the field, I didn't really want to tell people what I was doing, because I was worried I would be looked down upon, because this wasn't something physicians were trained to do. And now I'm proud to put myself out front and center and advocate for our field and advocate for our patients and do things like this podcast, talk about what we're doing, what works, what doesn't, what's changed, what hasn't. So yeah, thanks for having me on your show and looking forward to it.
And things really have changed so rapidly. So I've been doing this for 12 years now, when I first started doing this, even in residency. And it's changed so rapidly in that time. So I was originally, you know, a bariatric physician my first year, right? And we've changed our name since then to obesity medicine. And I suspect in my career, that name is going to change again of what we call ourselves. But things have, you know, really changed so much. And I actually felt the same way when I was, you know, starting my first job 10 years ago. And people are like, so what are you doing? I'm like, family medicine. And I remember one of my friends nudged me and they were like, and what else? And I was like, and obesity medicine. And people would sort of look at you like, what is that? Like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And so, yeah, like now I think we're kind of the cool kids, Dr. Lazarus. Like people have heard about our medications. They know we exist and they're actually coming to us to get help to figure out why they've been struggling to lose weight.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I've been on the board of the OMA now for more than a decade and advocating for, you know, really equality for our patients, that they can get the treatment that they deserve and that we can get insurance coverage for those treatments. And this was long before any of these new medications came to the market. But honestly, I think, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Oprah decided to highlight obesity medicine with two obesity medicine specialists on her show. And hey, I think Oprah moved this field further ahead in 1 hour, and I've moved it ahead in 20 years. So hats off to Oprah. But as you said, the conversation's changing now. I mean, this really is a treatable disease or condition, if you'd like to call it that. And it's worth educating our public and our physicians on what is the evidence, right? Why are we doing what we're doing?
So what would you say is some of the biggest changes in maybe how the medical community or other physicians think about this? Because I think, you know, again, you're kind of like pioneer. You were ahead of the curve on treating this as a medical disorder. But what have you seen change in your career in terms of the medical community around weight and obesity?
Well, I think the biggest change, and this has been going on for 10 years, is that we're starting to understand that obesity really is a disease. And it's not a character flaw or something that's caused by lack of willpower. And even if there's a behavioral component, much like there is to most things we treat in medicine, right? We could say there's a behavioral component to lung cancer and people who smoke are more likely to get it, but so are people that are exposed to secondhand smoke. So we all live in this environment that makes sustaining a healthy weight very difficult. But once a person has what we now call the disease of obesity, it's really hard to go back. Kind of like it's hard to go back once you have a disease of diabetes. You can't just eat a little bit less sugar and the diabetes goes away. Or a disease like hypertension, you can't just, you know, take deep breaths and do yoga and cure the hypertension. And I think the big change that we've seen really in the last 2 years is an understanding that medication can actually really be helpful when we add it to a properly structured behavioral program so that people can have a better shot at achieving a healthier weight and sustaining it. Where I feel like prior to a couple of years ago, there was a lot of bias and stigma, and there still is, about the use of what we now call anti-obesity medications.
Yeah, I agree that that's been the biggest change that I've seen in the last 10 years, at least, is the acceptance amongst not just the public, but amongst the medical community of medications. And you know, when I worked with you and Dr. Andrick in my training, and I saw that medications like phentermine and dithiopropion worked well for people, I came back to my training program and I said, why aren't we using these, right? And I got a lot of pushback from my supervising physicians. But you know me, I was pushy and I was like, show me why we can't use these. We can monitor people. We'll see them monthly. We'll make sure it's safe. We'll do the right things, you know, but let's give them a chance. I think we were being biased here. And so I started this, you know, little program within my residency clinic that went well. And so then immediately after that, once I was able to, I started giving talks wherever anyone would let me in front of doctors explaining how the different medications worked and why if your patients weren't having success with lifestyle alone, the medications might be worth trying. And there was a lot of pushback. People really were not that accepting of the idea of using a medicine. And they had a lot of bias and unfair concerns about the current medications, you know, back then. But now we have new meds. And so we have like Wegovy and Zepbound, which really have changed this discussion, right? So much. And I think a big part of why Oprah did her special was to specifically, you know, talk about those medications and all the buzz around them. How have you seen, I guess, that change in medication prescribing? You tell me a little bit about what you've experienced in 20 years, way before we had GLPs and maybe even knew those were on the radar, what the change in your clinic has been, and just, I guess, in the world of obesity medicine in terms of the use of medications.
Yes. I mean, to go way back in time, I was doing my medical training in the 90s. And in the 90s, physicians were using phentermine with some success. But in the late 90s and early 2000s, we got a new class of drugs called the fenfluramines. So we got this fenfluramine, Pondamin, and Redux. And those began getting prescribed with the phentermine. And people had really good weight loss on these drugs. But the problem is the fenfluramine class of drugs, which was not very well tested, very small clinical trials, very short. And they missed the fact that these drugs actually caused heart damage. And they could damage the heart valves, even with short-term exposure. And so those got taken off the market really quickly. But a lot of doctors felt like phentermine was part of that. And so they got very nervous about using the drug phentermine because they thought it might damage the heart. So like all physicians, we're trained first and foremost to do no harm. And so if there's a class of drugs and we're worried it's going to hurt people, why would we use it? In addition, obesity was really looked at in those days as a lifestyle choice, not as a medical problem. And virtually no insurance would cover any obesity treatment. So for example, if you did a proper weight loss program and treated a patient, you are unlikely to get any insurance reimbursement from that. So, I mean, that's way back then. These days, we understand phentermine is a safe medication for most people, maybe not for somebody with uncontrolled high blood pressure or somebody with a history of heart disease. But for a lot of people, phentermine is actually a safe and effective drug. The other thing that changed, I think, with Wegovy and Zepbound is we always looked at weight management as something where we could use a weight loss medication to help the patient lose weight, but then they'd be able to sustain the weight loss without the medication. So it's very common if we used a drug like phentermine, we might use it for 3 or 6 months, and then it, a lot of times it would get stopped. And unfortunately, the patient would regain the weight. And now we're really understanding if we're going to use a medication, whether it's phentermine or Wegovy or Zepbound, we really need to be looking at these drugs as long-term chronic treatments. Again, similar to the treatment of hypertension or diabetes. But we've got a long way to go on this, Dr. Francovilla. I mean, it's every day, I'll start a patient on a medication, they lose 30 pounds or they lose 50 pounds. I'm sure you've seen this. And then they see another doctor not involved in the obesity care, and the other doctor stops the medication that I'm treating with, which is very, very frustrating. Like you would never, let's say you sent your patient to a cardiologist and they put them on a medication for their heart. They're not going to come back to the primary care provider, and the primary care provider says, hey, I don't think you need that anymore because your chest pain went away. But it happens. I don't know if it happens with you, but in my because I function as a specialist and don't do general family medicine anymore. But all the time I see patients getting discontinued. Mm-hmm. And I know you're a speaker, as am I. We do a ton of speaking and educating physicians. But pretty much every time I do a program, the first question I get is, when do you stop the medication?
Right.
When do you lower the dose of the medication? They've sustained the weight loss for 3 months. Should we stop it? They've stopped losing weight. No, this is a chronic health problem. And so I do think the needle is moving and doctors are starting to understand that we need to treat it like the other chronic health conditions that we're trained to treat.
Right. Most of the time when we start a medicine for blood pressure, people have to continue it. It doesn't mean we never stop it. And especially if they, you know, have dramatic weight loss or change lifestyle, they often can stop it. But when we start that medicine, we expect someone's going to take it long term. You know, when we start a medicine for depression and someone's had depression most of their life, we expect that they're probably going to take that medication long term. And so it's just really continuing to change our mindset that if you have struggled with weight most of your life, and a medicine helps with that, you're probably going to need to keep taking that medicine, right? Unfortunately, we don't have anything yet that can reverse that. Maybe we will someday. Maybe that's something we'll see. But right now, I always say whatever you do to lose weight, you have to keep doing, right? So, you know, I've met people who've lost weight by doing a lot of exercise. They're able to do 2+ hours of exercise a day. They get really into a training program and they lose all this weight. And then something in their life happens. They have an injury, the COVID pandemic, whatever, they have a kid, and they no longer can exercise 2+ hours a day, right? Now they're doing like 20 minutes here and there and they struggle with their weight. Well, whatever you did to lose weight, you have to keep doing, right? And so medications are, I think, no different for most people there.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And also, if you think about it, for most people, over time, weight management gets harder, not easier. As we age, our metabolism slows down a little bit. Our ability to do all that physical activity gets a little less. We lose a little bit of lean body weight. We might develop other medical problems and have to be on other medications that can cause weight gain or make weight loss difficult. I mean, I don't know of anybody I talk to who says that they have less stress today than they had 5 years ago, or that they're sleeping better these days. That's actually the first questions I ask new patients is, how's your stress levels and your sleep? And I'm just waiting for the day somebody tells me, oh, I don't have any stress and I sleep great. So I think just looking at the American lifestyle, for a lot of people, weight management's getting harder, not easier. Now, by all means, you're right. Somebody could quit their job and move to Maui and become a yoga instructor, do a vegan lifestyle, and maybe they don't need the weight loss medication.
I've recommended to that to some people, you know, sometimes it's in jest, but it is to point out how challenging the alternative could be, right? Like, well, you could quit your job and, you know, like downsize your life and reduce your stress and have 2 hours a day to work out and, you know, hire a personal chef and all these things. But that doesn't sound very realistic. Like, you know, most of us can't just do that and wave a wand and completely change our life. So we have to operate within like the reality of our life most of the time.
Yeah, it does happen sometimes. I saw a guy a couple of weeks ago. He's turned 65. He's going on Medicare. He decided to retire. He was working for a tech company. He's been on Wegovy. He's lost a nice chunk of weight. But now that he's on Medicare, he's losing coverage. And it's going to go from free to $1,500 a month. And we decided to move back to one of the older oral medications. It's going to cost him $20 a month. And he agreed. He signed up at a local gym with a trainer. And he said he's committed to going every day for an hour and 3 days a week with the trainer. And when we look, that's still going to be a fraction of the cost of what the Wegovy would have cost him. But if he's getting into his trouble with his weight, we agreed we would consider restarting it.
Yeah, right. And you can always, you know, restart things and just, you know that those options are still there. All right, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about if there have been, you feel, any changes in the nutrition advice that we do give or that we should be given that you have seen in your 20 years doing this. What has changed with the sort of nutrition advice in that time?
Oh my gosh, how many diets have come and gone? I mean, back then, Atkins was very popular, and this high protein, low carb, ketogenic, very low calorie diet. It was very, very popular. And most of the medical clinics were doing ultra low carb food plans with high protein. Interestingly, over time, I think this higher protein, lower carbohydrate lifestyle continues to have a lot of traction and benefits for patients. So we still are advising our patients to go quite a bit higher on protein and lower on carbohydrate than the nutritional recommendations from the USDA, but not quite so extreme like we used to in the good old days. So a lot of our patients, for example, we might put their protein at 80 or 90 grams, say 10 or 12 ounces, which is roughly double what the USDA actually recommends as a minimum. And we still recommend some lower carbohydrate approaches, a lot of times like 70, maybe 100 gram of carbohydrate. So that would still be considered a lower carbohydrate. But the good old days of lose weight as fast as possible and then maintain it, we've really been moving away from that too. To your point, if it's not a sustainable lifestyle, they're going to regain the weight when they go off it. So I've really moved away from thinking about losing weight as fast as possible, and then you move over into a maintenance plan, into trying to do this, the whole thing, in a more sustainable way. The other big argument that we were having back in the early 2000s was low fat versus low carb. I mean, that every article, Chris Gardner was publishing articles about that from Stanford. And I think low fat, you correct me if I'm wrong, it's pretty much dead at this point. Nobody talks about that. And really what we talk about is healthy eating. So if we're eating fats, to choose healthy fats, or if we're eating carbs, to choose healthier carbs, whole grain carbs. And a lot of that I thought was pushed forward back when South Beach came out. And again, that's old news. But when I think about a modern South Beach now, it's more pushing us towards these Mediterranean diets, healthy fats, healthy carbs, adequate protein. And then more recently, there's been a lot of things published about these highly processed foods. Yeah. And those may have more inherent health risk. And trans fats, which got banned in commercial foods. So those are the fats that we think may actually contribute to heart disease risk.
You know, I've given this presentation for years on like, what's the best diet, right? People, that used to be the question everyone asked me, what's the best diet? And, you know, I think there's roles for all of them. I've seen people do amazing and transform their life on ketogenic diets. I've seen people who feel amazing on plant-based diets. And we have evidence that both of those can work for different people. But what we see in the medical community, the darling of medical research, is the Mediterranean diet, right? Which actually is high fat. It's just high in plant fats, particularly olive oil, right? It's not low fat by any mean, but it's not high in animal fats or saturated fats. And so anyways, this presentation that I've done for years, it goes through all the trendy diets, and I do pictures of how the diet could look in an ideal world and how people interpret it. And the ideal always looks about the same, no matter what the diet is, where there's tons of vegetables, there's healthy fats, there's some meat, maybe there's some nuts, but it's this really colorful plate of real food. And the like way that the diet is sort of done wrong and doesn't improve health or weight is like all this processed food that's technically following the rules of the diet, but it's all processed, right? And we don't see that same benefit. If you're doing a keto diet, but you're eating a ton of packaged food, you're probably not going to have the same benefits as if you're eating tons of vegetables and healthy meat. So anyways, to your point about the processed food becoming sort of the new bad guy, I think that there's going to be some traction in that, you know, that the more we eat real whole food, probably the better off we are, and that the processed food is probably the bigger trend. It hasn't necessarily been the carbs or the fat. It's been so easy to overeat those things when they're highly processed.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues that comes up with all my patients, and I'm sure with all of yours, it's not so much what the food choice is, but why did the person choose that food? So, you know, you have a horrible day and everything goes wrong and you're stressed and you're running a million miles an hour. And, you know, you finally get home and what are you going to eat? You're going to crave a salad, right? So people are getting home and they're reaching for those stress foods. They're convenient. They're easy. They're usually crunchy or high fat foods that kind of help people relax and unwind and feel better. So I think a lot of times we're choosing our foods based on our stressful day versus what we think would be healthy for us. So a lot of times, again, that comes back to this discussion around why are people choosing to eat what they eat? And they're just grabbing what's quick and convenient, makes them feel good. So, you know, a lot of people aren't gaining weight because they ate too many carrots. I mean, the carrots are in the drawer when they get home, but that doesn't tend to be what they reach for. That's one of the interesting changes, I think, in the last a year or 2 years as we've gotten some of these new medications, is we've had these medications like phenermine that actually help people control their eating. But the new medications do it in a little bit different way, where people come home after that long, stressful day, and now they actually want to eat the carrots. It's the strangest thing. So again, all of the medications can work well for weight loss, but some of these newer medications seem to alter what people actually want to eat, where they'll actually reach for those healthier options. And I found that super interesting.
It has been interesting. Yeah, I've had people describe feeling like they had like a brain transplant on the newer medications, on the injectable meds. They're like, it's like, they just don't even have the same relationship with food at all. Whereas oftentimes our medications like phentermine, it makes it much easier for people to stick to a plan, but they have to have a bit more of an intentional plan of what they're going to eat. Whereas the newer medications, some people, it's just natural all of a sudden for them, which is cool to see when people have that. And we just are able to make their life so much easier.
Yeah. So we have lots of different choices. So we have phenermine and dithiopropion, which work well for a lot of people. We have this drug called Contrave, also very cost-effective, which we find works really nicely, especially for emotional eaters, people that crave a particular food. And we use Contrave a lot also if people don't have coverage for the newer medications, because they can get it for about $100 a month, whether or not they have insurance coverage. And then we have the newer medications, the GLP-1s, which just work in such a different way than the things we've had in the past in terms of altering the whole appetite center, almost like telling the body that it's supposed to be at a lower weight and then pointing people towards the foods that'll help them get there. So it's nice to have these different treatment options. And at least in my clinic, a lot of times we'll use a stepped approach like we use for other diseases where we might try one of the older generics. And I'm sure your experience is like mine. Some people just do great.
Yeah.
And we can have them on a $10 or $20 generic and they do fantastic and they like the medication and are able to lose the weight. Then we've got some newer brand name oral medications that we can step up to if we need them. And then we have the injectable medications as well. So that's one of the nice things about practicing today compared to 20 years ago is we have so many more options so that we can get the right option for the right patient.
So switching, we talked about nutrition, we talked about medication. What, if anything, have you seen in terms of exercise recommendations change over the last 20 years? And where would you say we're at now with that?
Yeah, so as I was getting into the field, all that anybody talked about was cardio. And it was thought that if you did 30 minutes of cardio 3 times a week, that that would be adequate to prevent heart disease. And the other thing that's changed in my 20 years is 20 years ago, computers and phones weren't so ubiquitous in the workplace. In fact, we didn't have smartphones yet. Smartphones came out, what was it, like 2006? Right. So imagine not being on your phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I think back in the early 2000s, I actually think people moved around a lot more. They weren't stuck in front of a computer all day. They actually went to work. We didn't have Zoom cameras and we didn't have all this stuff. And now I think what's changed is just the general lifestyle has become a lot more sedentary. Most of us are sitting in front of the computer all day. And then as soon as we walk away from the computer, we're on the phone. So we're plugged in 24/7. Everybody's now like a physician. They're on call all the time. Like take realtors. They're getting calls continuously all weekend, any time of the day. So I think inherently we're plugged in all the time. What we're seeing from a weight management standpoint is 30 minutes 3 times a week. That doesn't cut it. If we're going to sit at a desk all day and then move for 30 minutes 3 times a week, that is just not anywhere close to enough movement for a healthy lifestyle. So these days we're really looking for an hour or more a day of purposeful movement. And we are also looking at not just doing cardio, but incorporating things like weights and resistance training, and also things like flexibility training. So I think a well-structured physical activity program, I love people to get a smartwatch or some sort of an activity monitor and tracks to see if they're actually purposefully moving at least an hour a day, and to have a mixture of cardio, resistance training, and then something that's more for flexibility and relaxation like yoga or Pilates once a week. And then it's important that it's fun. I mean, we don't want people doing things they don't like. They're not going to do it for that amount of time. So I don't love the word exercise because it has a negative connotation for some people where exercise is supposed to be hard and they don't feel good. So I really like just talking about physical activity. What kind of activities do you enjoy? You know, if you're going to work so hard to lose the weight, what do you want to do at that lighter weight? And so let's set some goals around that. Do you want to be hiking here in the Colorado outdoors? Do you just want to be able to walk your neighborhood and see your friends? I had a patient, she's actually a cancer survivor and came to see me. She developed cancer that was missed during COVID. And it's really a tragedy. Now she's 53 and she's gotten into the sport curling.
Oh, cool.
She's telling me she wants to lose the weight in part because she wants to be doing this competitive curling and, you know, brushing the ice. And I have a lot of patients that are wanting to be doing pickleball or doing tennis or doing golf. And so we'll focus on that. So, yeah. So if we're going to be doing the golf, maybe we plan to walk the course. If we're going to do tennis, maybe we work with a trainer to try to improve the tennis game. So it's really neat to set some goals around that.
Yeah, I agree. The strength training is, you know, really something we're talking about more than ever. It seems like that, along with the GLPs, has just, you know, skyrocketed in our conversations in the last couple of years. And it really is that mixture of movement. And if you're doing things you enjoy, you might naturally get that in. You know, if you're gardening, for example, which is a common way that my patients will move more, you know, you're getting cardio and you're moving around, but you're usually doing a little bit of strength training too, right? You're lifting bags of soil, you're digging, like, you know, there's a little bit of resistance there. So sometimes those natural things that we do give you a little bit more balanced movement as well too. Well, as we wrap up here, are there final thoughts that you would like to leave the audience with of, you know, how things have changed or maybe like what you see in the future? Like, what do you think the next 10 or 20 years might bring?
Yeah, I would love to talk about both of those things. So first of all, in terms of what's changed and what hasn't, we've talked a lot about what has changed, but one of the things that hasn't is I think a lot of people living with obesity still blame themselves for this problem and don't really, they just think it's because of eating too much and moving too little. And we have good science to show that that's just not true. That may be a piece of the equation, but it's not the whole picture. So obesity is a treatable problem. It's also preventable, right? So we really need to be focusing on strategies to help people not develop it. And once we get it, we want to treat it and we want to treat it early. We don't want to wait for the person to keep gaining weight and need a knee replacement. We want to get to this as soon as possible to prevent it from getting worse. So it's treatable. There's medications that help, and it's not the person's fault. So the problem is, one of the things that hasn't changed is a lot of people still just feel like it's their fault, or they feel like it's their fault because their doctor is not helpful. So if you're seeing a doctor and the doctor is not helpful with this, find a doctor that's board certified by the American Board of Obesity Medicine. You can find those doctors at obesitymedicine.org. There's a great list of doctors and also nurse practitioners and PAs that have an interest in this and can help you with this. So it's not your fault. You deserve treatment. Now, where are things going to be in 5 or 10 years? Well, a couple of things. I think in 10 years, I'll be retired. By then, it'll be 30 years. I think I'll have had enough. And you're going to be the pioneer, all right, in 10 years. But my hope in 10 years is that we are really treating this as a health condition. We're able to make a diagnosis. We're able to run it through insurance. We have a variety of cost-effective, safe treatments that really can help the person not only get back to a healthy weight, but sustain that healthy weight and not develop complications from their weight, like diabetes or heart disease. And I'm a firm believer that we're going to see this in the next 5 years, that this just becomes a normal part of somebody's treatment at their doctor's office.
I love it. Yeah, I think, you know, we had a formal prediction thing we did for our obesity journal, and I think I said that 2 years ago, but you're more optimistic than I am right now. I think it's a little bit of a longer journey right now. You know, for every step forward, we have like Oprah's, you know, talk and new meds, like we still are getting so much pushback. And so I hope that your optimistic take that in 5 years we will, you know, be in a much better place is true. Well, Dr. Lazarus, if people would like to connect with you or find your clinic or find more information from you, how can they find you?
Yeah, we're in Greenwood Village. They can call the office. It's 303-750-9454. Or just look up clinicalnutritioncenter.com, and that'll take you right to our website. If you forget that, just type in Ethan Lazarus, and I'm sure you'll find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And until next week, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Dr. Francavilla Show, where we learn about all things related to weight and health. If you love this podcast, make sure to leave those 5-star reviews and share this podcast with a friend or loved one. If you have a topic about weight and health you want me to tackle, head over to the website, thedrfrancavillashow.com, to submit your question. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss next week's episode. Take care.